does have it all. All of our pre-owned vehicles are Hubler Q certified, which include a 128-point vehicle inspection, a free Carfax vehicle history report, and two warranties. A two-year, 100,000-mile powertrain warranty, and a 30-day, 1,000-mile comprehensive warranty. Visit any of our 13 locations today, or click drivehubler.com. Hubler has it
all. Earlier on the Wake Up Call with KB and Andy.
Well, I hope Mother Nature cooperates tonight's Victory Field season opener there as the Indians welcome the Louisville Bats into town. It is an ugly-looking morning commute here weather-wise. I know Eastside 465, we talked about that, northbound right around 56th Street. Big, big backup, so check that out if that involves your typical morning commute. For Pacer fans last night, it was a fun commute home amidst some of the lightning in the sky as the Pacers get a nice win at home over the Brooklyn Nets. And Rick Carlisle joins us, as he does every Tuesday here on the Payless Liquors Hotline. Coach, we saw the scene in the post-game locker room. Chad Buchanan coming in to honor you for passing Red Auerbach on the all-time wins list. That is number 939. At some point, I'm sure there's an element of maybe, okay, you know, whatever, we don't need to celebrate each and every time you continue to move up. But does that one mean a little bit more, considering who you passed and the history you have of obviously him drafting you in Boston?
Well, yeah, it's just the whole thing is pretty mind-boggling to me. It speaks to, you know, how time passes so quickly. You know, it's been almost 40 years since I was drafted. And, you know, I remember I was, you know, we were a Final Four team in 84. You know, we played Indiana and, you know, we won the game against Indiana to go to Seattle. And after the trip to the Final Four, you know, we lost in the semis and overtime to Houston and came back. And then the next thing was the Portsmouth Invitational Tournament, which is, you know, a tournament, I believe it still goes on. And it's for guys that aren't necessarily high picks in the drafts, guys that are, you know, like nowadays there's a lot of second rounders and undrafted guys that go. And if they play well, undrafted guys may get drafted and, you know, second round guys, you know, may move up or may get to the first round or whatever. But anyway, I was playing on a team there and, you know, Portsmouth is in Virginia. So, you know, with us coming off of our, you know, Final Four experience and all that, there was some attention down there to our team and Red was there, you know, and when Red Auerbach walked in a gym back in those days, you know, to scout college talent, I mean, it was an event, you know, it was a happening. And so he was there for 2 days and we ended up playing two games. The first game I had a very good game. The second game I played okay. And off of that, and I remember, you know, you're staying at a Holiday Inn or something down there, you know, Portsmouth is a small town. And those are the old tube TVs in those days. And, you know, on the local news, they're interviewing Red and they're asking him, you know, they're asking him about me because we'd been in the Final Four. And he's saying, a few guarded, nice things, you know. But I, you know, you just don't know what's going to happen with all that stuff. Well, anyway, I ended up getting drafted. And back in those days, if you were drafted in a round other than the first round, you know, you may not find out about it until the following day, which is what happened. I didn't find out until the following late morning that I was drafted third round by Boston, which I thought was, you know, probably not a great thing. They had just won the championship and, you know, how many new guys were they going to be taking on that team? But the way it worked out, it was the biggest blessing in disguise you could have ever gotten, because a guy like me was, you know, going to struggle to make a team that didn't have a lot of, you know, high level star power. So that, you know, I could try to meld in as a role player, but anyway, this is a long story. And that was, you know, that was how I got my start in the league, and Red had an awful lot to do with it. So I'm very, very grateful. you know, his legacy is, you know, one of the great ones in all of sports history.
Coach, Rick Carlisle with us here on the Payless Liquors Hotline. Do you know who's next in front of you, who you could pass here in the next few days? Do you have any idea?
Well, you know, I do because, you know, the stuff is showing up a lot of places. But that's one that's even more emotional for me, you know, because Coach Fitch gave me my first coaching job. So,
yeah,
you know, I got to keep my eye on the ball, and we got to keep working on, you know, winning games. 6 games to go, and you know, every moment of every game has great meaning because you just don't want to have any slippage, and you want to do everything possible to give yourself the best chance to, you know, position as best you can.
Yeah, and I thought after listening to some of the player audio after the game last night, you know, I really thought, and even yours, I thought Obi Toppin and both Tyrese Haliburton and Siakam, everybody was saying exactly what you said. It was interesting. You started out your press conference saying, "Hey, we won tonight, but we know we have Brooklyn. In the Nets. We go to Brooklyn on Wednesday, and we know that's going to be a totally different game." Do you feel like right now your team is coming along, playing good basketball, and do you feel like they are as dialed in as you're saying?
Well, I believe that the spirit is there. You know, we're still very young, and so we have some whimsical moments, you know, where we do some, you know, some wacky things, but we have great guys, and I think they all have the same goal, which is to, you know, get into the playoffs and get the best possible seed. And so, you know, as we've gone down the stretch here, you know, there's a lot going on. I mean, you know, you look at the records of the teams that we've beaten and the teams that we've lost, and you realize that the parity in the league this year is unprecedented. And so, you know, Brooklyn, for example, is a team that, you know, last week we had a disappointing effort in Chicago on a Wednesday. And then, you know, Friday night, Chicago goes to Brooklyn. And it doesn't look like Brooklyn has much to play for in terms of, you know, any reality of getting in the play-in or anything like that. Well, Chicago goes to Brooklyn last Friday night and gets, like, smashed by Brooklyn, who... And that was their third consecutive win, I think. You know, so Brooklyn's still playing, and their roster is a very good roster, and they've got young guys that are developing. Like this guy Watford. You know, all of a sudden, you know, this guy is a beast out there, and they've got Cam Thomas, they've got Bridges. You know, Schroeder's having a great year. I mean, so we got, you know, and then last night, you know, Cam Johnson doesn't play because of injury management. And you know, Dennis Smith Jr. is a talented guy too, and he sat last night. So, you know, we don't even know who's going to play tomorrow. And meanwhile, we go in there and Miles Turner dislocated a finger on his shooting hand last night, and I don't know what his status is going to be tomorrow. So, you know, there's a lot of stuff. There's a lot of stuff flying around out there. So we've just got to brace ourselves each day and you know, be humbled by the opportunity to have such meaningful games every night and poise ourselves to do our best.
He is Rick Carlisle, and yes, the month of April here, definitely meaningful basketball on the plate for his Pacers. Again, off to Brooklyn later today. It'll be the Nets, and then big ones, really big ones, coming up this weekend, especially Sunday with Miami. Again, Rick Carlisle here on the Payless Liquors Hotline. Coach, we oftentimes get you on these Tuesday mornings. We forget to look back at games that might have happened last time we talked. I thought Friday night, the defensive effort, I mean, tremendous. And I know our Purdue faithful might have been focused elsewhere, but to play LeBron, to play Anthony Davis, and have that type of response, and, you know, I guess the whistle is the whistle that you got out there in L.A., but certainly defending without fouling was there on Friday night. What did you like about, in my opinion, one of the finer defensive efforts of the season?
Yeah, it was a defiant effort. You know, it was very, very focused, very concentrated. You know, Aaron Neeson's going through an entire game playing 39 minutes and only having one foul is, you know, that's that's a happening. And, you know, that just, it speaks to the level of concentration that he had. He was, we matched his minutes with LeBron's minutes. You know, and L.A. was coming after that game. I mean, they don't see many nights when LeBron James plays 39 minutes. So it was a very positive night. And, you know, I watched the Purdue game. You mentioned that as well. And I think the word that I would use to describe that game against Tennessee was that was their effort was defiant. I mean, that, you know, for their team, I can't imagine a more difficult physical matchup just in terms of athleticism and stuff like that. And after a little bit of an uneven start, I mean, the way those guys just kind of cast an iron will on that game was really great to see. And so wish them the best in the Final Four. Obviously a lot of interest, you know, with them being there, but yeah, the LA game was great. You know, last night there were some good things, but we need to clean some things up. And, you know, the game tomorrow night in Brooklyn is another Super Bowl.
Coach, I've been meaning to ask you about TJ McConnell here for the last couple of weeks. I mean, last night, again, there were several moments where he nearly has a steal in the backcourt. It just, it amazes me how nightly that becomes so routine. I think he's been a really important scorer for you, especially since Benedict Mathurin has gone down. I know you get asked about TJ a lot, but just in general, why has he been able to sustain the amount of years in the NBA that he has and really is flourishing right now for you in a very important role?
Yeah. I mean, there's another guy that you can use the word defiant as to how he approaches his level of competitiveness every night. And, you know, he's doesn't get enough credit as a scorer. I mean, I think it's pretty clear. And, you know, he's a hard play guy. He gets the crowd into it. You know, he gets a lot of assists defensively. He makes it a 94-foot game. You know, he picks up one or two illegal screening fouls every game. I mean, that's no picnic, as you're having to hit a guy going sideways and then you have to hit the floor. You know, I mean, what, you know, doesn't look like much fun really, but he turns it into a, you know, a level of joy that, you know, people really, really get into. And so, you know, it just seems ridiculous that at the beginning of the year, we were having a conversation about how he might not play this year, you know, because this happens, you know, this has happened a lot in his career. I remember a story when I got here that, you know, Nate McMillan, after Nate's first training camp here, or I guess it was TJ's first year with the team, had a conversation with TJ about how, you know, I guess it might have been Aaron Holiday who was going to be playing ahead of him, and he would just have to, you know, quote unquote, stay ready. And then TJ ended up getting into the first game that, you know, which was the game that Nate had talked to him about. And then he became the backup point guard and never lost the job, you know? So you can't, you know, the guy's phenomenal. And probably, you know, how this year stacks up to others, I can't imagine that this is not his best year, if not one of the top two.
Rick Carlisle with us here on the Payless Liquors Hotline. It's funny, I was scowling at Kevin Bowen because I wanted to ask you about TJ McConnell. It's the 10th straight game he's had, what, over 10 points. And you mentioned, going back to the beginning of the year as a follow-up coach, you know, beginning of the year, we didn't know. You just mentioned there, you didn't know if he was going to play or how much he would play. And there were games where, you know, he went stretches where he didn't play or didn't play very much for you guys at all. And listen, I know it's a long season. I know things change. I know there are injuries, but at what point did you realize, hey, instead of being a solid player that does have value, now he's got a ton of value with the things that he brings to the floor night in, night out? When do you think that changed for you?
Well, you know, similar to Nate's story, it probably changed on opening night. I mean, or excuse me, not opening night, but the second game, which was at Cleveland. I mean, I don't know if you guys remember that one, but we won the opener against Washington at home, and then we go to Cleveland and we're down 17 points in the first quarter. And so, you know, I put TJ in the game with about 3.5, 4 minutes to go in the first quarter, and he gave us an unbelievable spark, and we were able to, pull, I guess, even at halftime or something like that, ended up winning the game. And so there's an example right there that, as a coach, as a team, guys that compete like TJ McConnell are always going to be important.
Again, Rick Carlisle is with us here, off to Brooklyn here. Coming up later today, they will play the Nets, a little baseball action, two games and three nights here in Brooklyn tomorrow night. Coach, I think you mentioned it last night, x-rays negative for Miles Turner, and then what, at this point you just test to the effectiveness, I guess, of the right hand to see if he can get, or when he can get back in the lineup?
Yeah. Hard to say. I know he's going to see our hand specialist today, and it's going to be a pain tolerance thing, most likely. That's how these things usually are. I mean, dislocated fingers are really painful, and so we'll have to see. And if he can't go, then we'll have to lean on Jalen Smith and Isaiah Jackson. And this is another thing. I can't say enough about how Isaiah Jackson has matured as a player, and this is year three or four, or whatever. I guess it's year three, but he has just kept himself ready when needed. Has had an amazing attitude. I mean, like 2 weeks ago, the game in Detroit, decided to play him because he was going home, and the guy was dominant in that game. I mean, he changed the game with his speed and running, and we were a plus. I don't know what it was, a bunch with him in there. And so, having a guy like that available, knowing that he's working hard, knowing that he's staying ready, is, it really helps our situation. But we'll hope for the best on Miles. Hopefully, he won't miss any games, but we won't know until tomorrow.
I know you touched on Purdue earlier. Would rooting interest lie with the ACC Saturday night, or will you keep it local here with the Boilers?
I gotta keep it local. You know that.
I was gonna say, yeah. Okay. All right.
You can't say.
Yeah,
I'm just making sure. Yeah, this is not the SEC. ACC people don't chant ACC like they do.
Yeah. Hey, listen. You can look at both sides of that ACC thing. It's one thing to support it, but it's also a kind of a competitive thing too. But yeah, this is really going to be a really interesting Final Four, and you look at, like, DJ Burns and what he's doing. I mean, this is really some unusually interesting stuff going on in the NCAA tournament. And then, of course, last night, because of our game, we missed the Iowa LSU game, but then caught some of the UConn game against USC. I mean, and you talk about great players like Paige Beckers and Juju Watkins. I mean, oh my gosh.
Outstanding.
these women can really go. I mean, it was, pretty amazing to watch. So, the next week or so of basketball is going to be, really awesome.
Yeah, looking forward to it. At some point, maybe asking you more of a direct Caitlin Clark question, but know that that cannot take place here maybe in 13 days when the draft does occur. Coach, congrats on the win last night. Congrats on continuing to rise up that all-time wins list. Pretty darn impressive. Safe travels to Brooklyn, and looking forward to talking to you next week.
All right, thanks, guys. Take care.
It was quite the scene on Sunday in Detroit. I've talked about all week long about how, honestly, the post game is why I love sports, seeing all the emotion come out from the respective Boilermakers up there in Detroit, and a man who was there and has certainly had a very, very nice career for Purdue. He joins us now on the Payless Liquors Hotline. Dakota Mathias, second all-time in three-pointers for the Boilers, and again, inside the building on Sunday up there. Dakota, thank you for the time. What were your emotions like there in those final few minutes? I said at the under four timeout, we needed a pacemaker on everybody in the building on Sunday for the Boiler fans.
Hey guys, thanks for having me. No doubt, you're right on it, man. It was an unbelievable game. It was so great to be there in person, and the cool thing to seeing some former other players and the fans just walking around, the buzz in the arena. Like you said, those last 4 minutes, I think It was just so exciting for everybody. It's been a long time coming, and you just got to feel so good for Coach Paint, man. He's
Dakota, be honest. Did you think they were going to get through this year? Even at the beginning of the year, did you think, okay, with Edie and you know these guys coming back and the embarrassment from last season, did you think this is going to be the year that Purdue finally breaks through and they get back to a Final Four?
I really did, especially after last year, how it went down. And then, you know, I think it really helped Zach playing with the Canadian national team, you know, how he came back and how he started off so well this year. And he's just been on a mission, man. You can see it in his interviews and his eyes. Like, he's all business right now. He wants to get this done. And, you know, if there was ever a team to do it, these guys, they're so competitive. And just the resilience to bounce back after what happened last year has been so impressive. And we're so excited to be able to go watch him in Phoenix, man.
He is Dakota Mathias, of course. You remember him well from his days at Purdue, a couple Sweet 16s there, and second all-time on the three-point list. Dakota, if you don't mind, could you kind of update our audience where you are professionally? I think I have this right. Most recently in Germany, and your season ended a little over a month ago?
Yeah, so I actually had season-ending surgery on my ankle. So the season's still going on over there. I was in Germany. You know, was playing well early in the year and just had a little issue. Had to come back and get ankle surgery here in Indy. My wife and I live up here in Westfield, so I'm back rehabbing for the rest of the season, and fortunately I got some time to see Purdue play now, so a little silver lining in that.
Shout out to the Shamrocks there, a little Westfield action for Dakota Mathias. Yeah. How are you watching these games when you're over in Europe? The time difference is doing you zero favors.
No, yeah, it's tough. We didn't get to watch a lot of them early there at 1 or 2 a.m., so all the early tips here were nice because it was right, you know, at 7, 8 p.m. We got to watch a few of them, but like I said, being back here, that's kind of the silver lining and having, you know, season-ending surgery. You get to watch the games, and we're going to head out to Phoenix here on Friday, so we're excited about that.
Dakota Mathias joining us here, former Purdue player here on the Payless Liquors Hotline on this Tuesday. You know, I've asked different players that have come on, and there are a lot in Purdue lore, but also Matt Painter, you know, being there since 2005, like yourself. You know, you came in, you were averaging 4 points, you end up averaging 12 points at the end of your career. You look at your three-point percentage goes from 32%, Dakota, to 47% when you're done there playing at Purdue. My question, and I don't know if anyone actually knows the answer, but maybe you do. How is Matt Painter and his staff, how do they develop guys to where they come in, they work their ass off, and at the end of 3, 4, 5 years, whatever it is, you guys are all so much better players than when you entered his program. How does he do that?
Yeah, I think it's a couple things. First off, it's the type of guys you recruit. I mean, these guys, a lot of the guys that come through there are, you know, they're resilient, they're high character, they're blue-collar guys that love the game. So it's always hard for a freshman coming in. You know, it's very rare to come in and, you know, play, you know, 35, 36 minutes a game and play well. So that kind of wears you down a little bit. So you get better as the years go on, and it's just the constant work. And, you know, even in his recruiting pitch, he's so honest. And that continues the whole time you're there. So, like, after, you know, a tough year, he's going to tell you what you need to work on. And, like I said, the type of guys he recruits, you listen to that, you take that in, and you go back to work. So I think just a combination of his honesty and then the type of guys in there that want to get better each and every year and continue to do that and put the work in.
Again, he is Dakota Mathias. He was in the building on Sunday up in Detroit and off to the Final Four to watch his Boilers try to bring it home as they will tip off 6:09 coming up against NC State on Saturday. Dakota, I want to go back to your recruiting process from Ohio, and correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think a ton of like high major offers. What did you know about Purdue and Matt Painter before the recruiting process happened?
Yeah, no, not a lot of high majors. I mean, I had, you know, West Virginia, Belmont, some different schools like that. But in the Big Ten, you know, Purdue was the only one. And coming from Ohio, you know, everybody loves Ohio State. So that was kind of, you know, growing up, I wanted to go to Ohio State, and obviously didn't get recruited by them. And, you know, like I said, Coach Painter and Coach Gary recruited me really hard. I wanted to play in the Big Ten. And like I said, just his honesty, you know, what he saw in me. And I always appreciated Purdue because they had this, you know, blue collar play hard mentality, you know, and that's how I grew up and that's how I am. So it was just a great fit for me. And I love the type of guys they had at that time, you know, Ryan Smith, Robbie Hummel, DJ Bird, those guys, I could see myself, you know, fit into that role and how they played. So it was a no brainer for me. And like I said, you know, Coach Paints, he's an honest guy. He's the best in the business, and I wouldn't want to play for anybody else.
Obviously, we saw the emotion from Robbie Hummel on Sunday there. And, you know, I think back to your guys, I think it was your senior year when Isaac Haas goes down in that opening round game. And I mean, hell, the hook and hold, you might as well call it the Isaac Haas, you know, rule or injury going back to that. If you could, you walk us through maybe your emotions at the final buzzer. Is there an element of like snake bitten that you feel from not getting maybe a true run? And I don't know, maybe a little bit of that was felt at the buzzer on Sunday.
Honestly, not really. I felt so great and proud, you know, to be a Boilermaker and just for Coach Payne and for the fans. I mean, like you said, we had the Isaac Haas thing my senior year after we won 30 games. You know, all the Robbie Hummel stuff. You know, the box out against Virginia. You know, the year after I left with Carson and Ryan Klein. All those heartbreaks and things. Like, our fans deserve this. All our former players, former coaches, everybody that put so much time and effort into this. It's just, you get overwhelmed with the emotion, and, you know, it's never felt, you know, snake bitten or anything like that. It was just, I was so proud and, you know, happy for all the fans and for Coach Payne more than anything.
You know, there's so many different directions we could go here. You know, I just, for me, Dakota, I think, you know, I think they're going to win. I think Purdue or you guys are going to win on Saturday, and I think it's just going to set up Monday against UConn and what UConn has done, you know, discarding everyone by seemingly 30 points. But how do you think Coach Painter, I won't say refocuses, because I think this team has had a look getting off the bus. You mentioned earlier in our interview, Zach Edey, you know, the look, the scowl almost that he has had in his face. But, you know, winning the other night, Dakota, felt very much of, we told you so, right? We went through this year of BS where we got told and laughed at by losing to a 16 seed, and we told you so. We told you we were going to come back and win the Big Ten and then go to the Final Four, and maybe they gave themselves 24 hours to kind of bask in that. How do you, as a player, refocus? They travel today and then get in Phoenix and really get ready for two more games that can forever change your life.
Yeah, and I think I've heard multiple guys and talked to, you know, Braden and Fletch after. I mean, they're very excited, obviously, going to Final Four, but the whole message was two more. And I think even Fletcher, you know, held that up after the game. You know, two more, like, they're not content with this. Like, obviously, it's extremely exciting, especially for the fan base and everybody like that. But these guys want to win it all. You can tell just how competitive they are. Like I said, Zach, he's all business, man. He's on a mission. And they're not content with just getting to a Final Four. They want to go out there and win it. And obviously, you know, NC State's on an unbelievable run right now, but I think we handle that too, and it's going to be hopefully a hell of a matchup against UConn on Monday night.
Again, Dakota Mathias with us here, one of the best shooters in the history of Purdue. Dakota, we'll end with this, and thank you very much for the time on this Tuesday morning. We talk so much, and understandably so, and deservedly so, hell, look at what he did on Sunday, about Zach Edey. Give me an under-the-radar storyline that you don't think gets enough attention for this specific Purdue team in making this run to the Final Four.
I think it's Braden Smith. All year, he's been unbelievable. Obviously, Zach deserves, you know, all the credit, and but I think Braden's the most important guy on this team. Obviously, Zach's the best player of the year and all that. But Braden runs this show. I mean, you could see he was exhausted. How hard he played, you know, against Tennessee. You know, guarding Connect a little bit at the beginning. You know, coming off multiple ball screens and stuff. But he makes this thing go. And if he keeps doing what he's doing, I love our chances against, you know, anybody in this Final Four.
All right, 3-point contest. You, Carson, Ryan Klein.
Oh boy.
Let's put Fletcher and Braden in there to round it out. Who's taking that home?
Let's see here. I'll be one easy. I'll give Carson 2, Klein 3, Fletch, and then Braden.
Boy,
I feel pretty confident about that one. Yeah, that's an easy one.
Dakota Mathias, if Purdue can get an ounce of that confidence and bottle it up here coming up Saturday and Monday, they very well could be cutting down the nets. Dakota, get back to full health. I know you've had a really nice professional career so far. Hope that continues for you, and enjoy everything Phoenix has to offer.
Awesome, man. Thank you, guys. I really appreciate it.
Dakota Mathias right there on the Payless Liquors hotline. Seemed like such a nice, nice individual. And then don't you love when the competitive spirit comes out?
Oh, he's like, no, I'm winning. I might flip maybe him and Carson. That would be the only thing.
Now,
that
that's how the list is. Carson is the all-time three-point makes leader. Dakota is second on that list. I loved how he talked about the recruiting process. And I think he didn't maybe say this directly, but it's a two-way street in recruiting, and I feel like oftentimes the program doesn't recruit the kid and the personality enough, if that makes sense.
Oh, like, I don't think they do very much at all, KB.
Like,
no.
Do you think there's more there? And, you know, you can talk about it with Zach Edey of like, okay, it's one thing for Steve Lutz to come back to Matt Painter and say, hey, there's a 7'4 dude at IMG.
Right.
And, like, you have got to go see him. If you're Matt Painter, though, is your first question like, okay, what's the work ethic? Is there development? Can he be willing to maybe take a redshirt? You know, something like that. You know, those two-way streets in recruiting, I feel like, don't get talked about enough. And Matt Painter, again, he said it to us in December. He said it quite often. You know, and Dakota Mathias kind of spearheaded some of this. That was at that critical time where Purdue had come off a couple 500 seasons. And Matt Painter has been very honest in saying, we need to go find some of those kids that Belmont is offering and Davidson is offering.
I'm sure that's what Purdue fans wanted to hear.
Exactly. But it's putting the puzzle together. Like, okay, how do we, you know, complement, you know, Biggie Swanigan or Travion Williams or Isaac Haas or, you know, some of the, you know, bigger guys they had on those Purdue teams. And obviously Dakota Mathias certainly was an ideal blueprint piece for those Purdue teams.
Before we take a break, I'm just going to throw this out here. It's always good to be honest with the audience. That entire interview, I have had tow truck people contact me. For people that don't know, I blew a tire downtown in one of the massive potholes. So I don't know. How are we going to make this show content, guys? Because I may have to run out at some point and let this individual in our garage here downtown. Again, 11 a.m. is when I
put
down.
That's the element that I love about it.
He's called 14 times. I got to answer at some point.
Oh, you got to. Get out of here.
You want me to answer this real quick? Okay.
Yes. Yeah. You get out. I will, Mark, that is hell.
That sucks.
I mean, a flat tire in this weather.
Yeah, that's not ideal. That whatever he said it was a couple blocks from the garage. And then not only that, but, you know, our garage has an incline, obviously. You're going either below ground or above ground. He went below ground with a flat tire.
I mean,
that
I've watched tow trucks try to operate in our garage, and it's like,
it's tight quarters.
That is an understatement. I think this has little bearing on Saturday night, but for what it's worth, Purdue and NC State did play 2 years ago. Purdue was ranked number one at the time. They win that game in overtime. Big comeback. They were down 13 in the second half. Played out in the one of those Hall of Fame invites in New York. Talk about something you won't see on Saturday. Zach Edey played 12 minutes in that game. Ethan Morton and Mason Gillis played more minutes than Zach Edey. Ethan Morton had double the amount of minutes. Obviously a young Zach Edey with 9-7. In that game, Ethan Morton, 24 minutes, Mason Gillis.
If Zach Edey plays 12 minutes, I'm going to assume that Purdue wins by like 60.
You know, there, and I'll say this to Andy when he gets back in. He, you know, there's times where I feel like Andy's acting like NC State is, you know, whatever, grambling in his descriptions of them. The only way I do think it could be seriously competitive is for some reason DJ Burns is able to get Zach Edey in foul trouble.
Yep.
Like, because that's the one thing we've seen at times in the regular season. But again, if you are unable to establish yourself in the bonus, Edey gets in foul trouble, whatever, you struggle shooting in a dome, it would have to be, you know, quite the domino for all of that to unfold. All right, still coming up, Fran Fraschilla talking a little NIT with him as he's on the call tonight for the Sycamores. We'll do that at 9 o'clock. It will be Indiana State calling Hinkle home as they take on Utah in one semifinal. And on the call from ESPN, the great Fran Fraschilla joins us. Fran, I love the description you had for the Sycamores the other day. Beeline on steroids to describe the ISU offense. Cannot wait for the whole nation to experience that tonight.
Should be fun. I'm in one of my favorite places. You know, the Hinkle Fieldhouse is a cathedral of basketball. We worship the ground in here because of the great history. And to have the NIT here, coincidentally, Indiana State, what, maybe 75 miles west. You know, that it'll I last one in Terre Haute, turn out the lights tonight. Let's put it that way.
Yeah,
it's going to be a good crowd. And this is a good team. I've really gotten to enjoy getting to know Coach Scherz. He's really, really a basketball savant as far as offensive basketball. He's got a team that fits that style and philosophy, and they're going to take on a Utah Utes team that is heading into the Big 12 next year, where I'll see them a lot. But this is a big challenge because this is actually a big team. It's 2 7-footers in the starting lineup. It's going to be interesting to see if that offense can work against this kind of size.
Fran, if you don't mind, could you kind of nerd out with us on what specifically stands out to you from an offensive standpoint? Clearly, Josh Hurts has been a name that people have coveted here in the coaching cycle. What is it about what Indiana State does?
It's a really good question, so I'm going to try to explain it as easily, as simply as I can for your listeners. Basically, if you obviously when you watch Jokic play, this is a team whose focal point of the offense in terms of the passing and playmaking really goes through Robbie Avila, their center. And what that does is it allows the other four players, all really good athletes, all good shooters, to kind of play interchangeably with Robbie as sort of the hub of the offense. And so it takes a lot of pressure off a point guard who's a traditional point guard, because these guys, once it gets over half court into Robbie's hands, they pretty much can play around Robbie. And then there's because of Robbie being away from the basket, there's a lot of spacing, room for cutting. I mean, anytime you have guys who can cut hard, it brings the defense into the lane, and then that opens up the three-point shot, you know, behind those cuts. So, and then I think the last thing is they figure out on the other team's defense which guy that they can possibly exploit who may not be a great defender, and they try to put him on an island, if you will, with some one-on-one stuff or, you know, being able to isolate a bad defender. And they do it well because there's a plan in place. It's not just we're going to go run around and cut and move with no purpose. There's a purpose to everything they do.
Fran Fraschilla, ESPN, he'll be on the call tonight. Indiana State.
I love
State
the whistles in the background.
Utah. I do. I absolutely yep. do. A lot of basketball. We'll get to your thoughts on the Final Four here in a second. But, you know, one thing with Coach Schertz that I am impressed with is, you know, this team, you know, maybe not him, but a lot of the players, Fran, they thought they were going to make the NCAA tournament. Yes. And, you know, Selection Sunday happens, and, you know, they decided, hey, we're Indiana State. We're going to play basketball here. I know your fellow worker there, Tom Crean, had a very impassioned speech on Selection Sunday and Monday.
Yes.
How teams don't play in the NIT. They have played in the NIT. They played well in the NIT, and now they're in the Final Four of the NIT. Can you talk about him and them making the decision, hey, we're going to play, and then while yeah. his name is a hot name, you know, with some jobs, they have stayed focused, and they find themselves in what's going to be a great atmosphere tonight at Hinkle?
It's a great question. I've got 5 NIT watches as a head coach, and, you know, so that's – and I will tell you that having covered now the NIT for most of my 20 years here at ESPN, the first game is always the most difficult game because it takes place 48 hours after Selection Sunday. This team particularly thought they were going to be in the field. And you work all summer and fall for Selection Sunday night, and then you're told you're not good enough. And it's very easy for some teams either to not play in the tournament, like St. John's decided not to play.
Yep.
And the other thing is it's really hard to get your guys ready for that first game. If you guys remember, they trailed SMU by 20 at home in the first game.
Right.
And traditionally, once you win the first game, game 2 is a little bit easier. They had a great crowd against Minnesota. And then when we were in Terre Haute last week, it was just absolutely phenomenal when the Big 12 Cincinnati Bearcats came to town. And now all of a sudden your juices are flowing and you realize, like as of today, there are only 8 teams playing in basketball, in college basketball on the men's side. I'm going to share something with you that nobody knows, but Coach told us yesterday. He had his staff call all the parents and get all the film they could of when these guys played in high school and grade school and biddy basketball and little AAU. And he put a montage together for the team on that following Monday. And he said, just remember why you play basketball. You've all played because you love the sport and there's a joy for it. And, you know, just playing with the guys' minds. And here they are. You know, they're playing really well. And tonight they get a chance to show the country that, you know, hey, maybe the committee did make a mistake. And these guys should have been in. And, by the way, Seton Hall feels the same way because, you know, Seton Hall, all they did was beat UConn by 15 at home.
Yeah.
You know, so I think it was a pretty good ploy. But you have to love playing to get yourself ready for the NIT. And then you realize, hey, we're playing for a championship. And there's going to be an amazing crowd here tonight at Hinkle, so that'll be fun.
I was going to say, Sheehan Holloway probably fielding some calls from coaches. How did you compete at the level you did against UConn this season? Maybe yeah. Thad Matta as well, with Butler having 2 pretty competitive games against UConn. The great Fran Frischilla is on the call tonight against 7 o'clock Indiana State in Utah. And then, as he said, Seton Hall and Georgia are going to follow that in the NIT semis. Last one for me, NIT related, before maybe switch gears to Purdue in the Final Four. It's at Hinkle. You know, I mean, to us, it's our basketball cathedral. We absolutely adore it, love it. We can't get enough of it. Certainly Madison Square Garden, the rich history there. What do you make of now the NIT being right here in the city of Indianapolis for the Final Four?
I love it. I love it. You guys probably know I'm a basketball junkie. You know, I've never had a real job in my life. It's been basketball since I left college and started as an assistant coach. And I spent 8 years in Ohio at OU and Ohio State. I've been in Indianapolis many times, the Final Four, Hoosier Hysteria, state high school championships. And, of course, I did one of the great bracket buster games. I don't know if you guys remember this, but 06 or 07, Brad Stevens was coaching, and Drake came in and was one of those rare – Drake's pretty good now. But
I was in the building, Coach.
Yeah, that was an amazing game. It was a heartbreaking loss for the Bulldogs.
Right.
But the other Bulldogs won, as now that I think about it. And but I've been in here before. I've done other games, and it's just an amazing place. And the building looks great. I'm staring out at the Indiana State walking through right now. And you know, I asked somebody from the NCAA just a couple minutes ago, hey, when's the Final Four back here? And it's back here in 2 years. And anybody who's been a part of college basketball as long as I have, we love Indianapolis because it's a great city. Everything downtown is confined. The volunteer help is amazing. You know, I went to Harry and Izzy's last night, you know, all the restaurants. Steak and Shake on the corner right there by the, you know, downtown. So,
oh, hell yeah.
It's a great basketball community, and whether it's high school, college, or NBA, or something like the NIT or Final Four. So, great. It's great to be back here because basketball is in the DNA, as you guys know quite well.
Fran Frischilla joining us. He'll be on the call tonight for Indiana State as they get ready underway at about 7 o'clock on ESPN. He joins us on the Payless Liquors Hotline. Fran, you know, transitioning quickly to Purdue, we followed them all year, but you still get to the moment where, you know, it's a one-point game with 3 minutes to go, and Purdue outlasts Tennessee, and you saw the emotion. We saw the tears there with the Purdue faithful. But not only that, it really did feel like, you know, people felt in the, you mentioned the basketball community, not only here, but the basketball community that you're a part of, Fran, that Matt Painter finally gets over the hump. They get, you know, the embarrassment of last year and then they make the Final Four. What makes Matt Painter so good? Did you feel that way as one of the good guys got to the Final Four this year? And then to pile one other thing on top of this long question, what does Purdue need to do to advance to Monday night? What do they need to do against NC State?
All right, well, let's take Matt Painter first. We're thrilled for him. Matt is authentic. Matt right now, along with a couple other, you know, as you transition away from, you know, Coach K and Boeheim and eventually Izzo and Jay Wright, certainly Matt is one of the voices of college basketball. He's a conscience. He says what's on his mind. He's not hesitant to talk about the good things and the bad things and try to correct the bad things. And he's a tremendous coach. There's no question about it. Those of us who have been in the coaching community are absolutely thrilled for him because he truly is what we all should stand for in the community. You know, that's the first thing. To see Purdue and, you know, Coach Katie there, and again, I'm a former Buckeye, so I know what it's like going into Mackey. You know, Purdue basketball, you know, in some ways, I don't think Purdue basketball has gotten the credit it's gotten over the last 10 years. It's not a blue blood, but it's close. You know, it really is. The history, the tradition, the Rick Mounts and, you know, all the great teams they've had. So that's the second thing that I think to see Purdue in the Final Four, it just fits. It really does fit. And then lastly, you know, this is a unique Final Four because I think most of us are expecting to see Purdue-UConn on Monday night, you know, in a heavyweight title battle between two of the best big guys in college basketball in recent years. Yet, Alabama can put points on the board, so, you know, it's going to be interesting to see what they do with UConn. UConn's not unbeatable, neither is Purdue, as we know. And then NC State's on this magical run, and I hate to remind you guys of 1983, but that was a team very similar to this that basically played a play-in game every single game for 8 or 9 games, whether it was a NCAA tournament or the NCAA tournament. They found themselves playing against big bad Houston with Olajuwon. So we should have a great weekend down in Phoenix. I'll be down there Friday morning, and it would not shock me at all if Purdue comes away with a national title, but it's going to be a fun Final Four.
I don't know if the coach and you will allow for it, but if you could play out the hypothetical of Monday night, it's not always a given we get the Ali Frazier type of matchup. I think Monday would almost have that feel if it is UConn and Purdue. What would be your early, take the coach hat off from Saturday night, if you don't mind, looking at UConn and Purdue?
I would say the poise of the young, still young backcourt of Purdue, you know, the poise of Lawyer and Smith, and making sure they can get into their offense and get the ball inside, you know, versus a relentless half-court pressure of UConn. You know, both coaches are friends. I texted both of them this week. I texted Danny Hurley, and I just said, you are a machine. This is Mike Tyson in his prime. Like, they take no prisoners, UConn. And when you play a team that's, you know, is not going to, you know there are teams that just sometimes come out with without the same energy that they would have over the course of a season. This UConn team never really, they may not play great every night, but they never, ever take a day off from the intensity level. So Purdue in the first 5-10 minutes of that game are going to have to weather the storm of this relentless, aggressive defense. And once Smith and Lawyer kind of settle into the game, then I think it becomes really a good game. And Purdue on the other end is a good defensive team. You still got to score through Edie. That's not easy on the defensive end. And so, I'd give UConn a slight edge. If I'm not betting, but if it was like, UConn plus 3.5, that would make sense to me. But we also know that, Final Four, 70,000, anything can happen. And hopefully we have just 3 great games all weekend.
Well, I was already excited to watch the Sycamores tonight, and then I heard Fran Fraschilla was on the call. My excitement level rose a bit. Fran, absolutely love when you do your analyst work. Love you during the draft with the international prospects as well.
We'll need it this year,
I was going to say, it sounds like we're going to need it this year with how the 2024 draft is shaping up. But hope Indy treats you well, and thank you so much for the time.
It always does, and it's great to be on with you guys.